Greetings. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and with Ken Nash, we're building bridges. The depths of Israel-U.S. depravity against the indigenous people of the land. Palestine. Report back from Gaza with trauma surgeon Dr. Mark Perlmutter. No more genocide in our name. We can't, we mustn't stop talking about and taking action for a free, free Palestine. Dr. Mark Perlmutter. But before I tell you who he is, if you don't know, I'm looking at the endless headlines that greet me every morning. Airstrikes kill more than 30 in Gaza. Two Israeli soldiers die in enclaves north. Rescuers could not get to a building that was hit, an official said. More than 13 people were killed, according to the civil defense spokesman of an emergency rescue group. He said that several others were wounded and that rescuers were still searching the rubble, and on and on and daily. And that's when we're fortunate enough to actually have a report about what is happening in Gaza, what is also happening on the West Bank, because more and more the media is silencing the information, not to mention killing off the reporters that bring us the information about what is really happening. Well, we have a friend, Gaza has a friend, Dr. Mark Perlmutter, who is returned from Gaza. He is a surgeon, and we're going to find out why he was there and what he witnessed. Why? Because we want to develop more friends to speak about Gaza, to rise up, to put their hands up, and to speak about, and not only speak about, but to take action. And I should say this week in particular, to take action for an immediate arms embargo. And with that, Dr. Mark Perlmutter, it is a pleasure, it is an honor to have you as a friend of the people of Gaza, a friend of the people of Palestine. Thank you for joining us.
And oh, I hope it's you're my not pleasure. I'm honored to join you. As I said, I'm sorry. We lost one of our transmission towers in the recent storms in North Carolina here, local to me. So my reception is in and out. So I apologize.
Well, we're going to keep you as consistent and as long as we can. So the first thing really is, let's get really to the point. What brought you to Gaza? I know that you are a surgeon who's worked in other areas of great trauma. But with that being said, what was specific to what brought you to Gaza and what was unique about your experience in Gaza?
What brought me to Gaza was I remember when I was a kid looking at my father, who was a physician in at the end of World War II, and whose job it was as a Jewish physician was to go into some of the concentration camps at the end of the war and render medical care. And he brought back with him just a ton of shoeboxes full of photographs, which I'm still in possession of. And those photographs are horrific in that they showed, for example, front end loaders and bulldozers and dump trucks filled with the skeletal remains of skin stretched over skeletons of recently murdered and genocided Jews that were getting ready to be dumped into long ditches. And those images, when you see them as a kid and revisit them several times in your life, are images that you can't forget, because I've never known that type of horrific treatment of human beings in my youth. I've seen it after medical school in some of the places I've gone to. I was at Ground Zero on 9/11. I've been to Haiti 5 times after the earthquake, starting the day of the earthquake, at Hurricane Andrew and Katrina the day the earthquakes hit. So I've always responded to some national disasters, and some global disasters, but I've also done 40 surgical mission trips in the last 30 years on 4 continents. And I always seek out areas that are the poorest. And And there are also high crime areas, and the crime tends to be uglier. The carnage tends to be higher. But if you combined all of what I've seen, including Ground Zero, all 5 trips after the Haitian earthquake, where significantly more people died, when you combine that with both hurricanes, and the 40 years of surgical experience, even in places like San Pedro Sula, Honduras, which was prior to the Ukraine considered the murder capital of the world, because of the drug cartels, that's where Trump's quote unquote horrific term came, the caravan of murderers and rapists from Honduras came into our country, and where he separated mothers and babies illicitly. That's the town that they came from, and I was actually there when the march started, and doing surgery, and many of my patients joined that march, because they had no choice, not because they were criminals. But if you combined all those things together to get back on point, you would still not match the carnage that I saw within my first of almost 3 weeks in Gaza. Just the quality and the quantity of death and morbidity is was immeasurable, and there was no not. Can you hear me still?
Yes.
Okay, there was no day that was not met with one or two mass casualties, and the mass casualties were timed quite specifically. I was there during Ramadan, and which is a religious season where Muslims fast around 4:30 or so. The fast is broken with a period of prayer and communal eating. The men huddle together and eat and pray together, and the women and children do. But the drone activity would pick up right before then. And when collections of women and children and men were seen, that's when the 2,000-pound bombs dropped. These are non-discriminate weapons that leave a hole the size of a football field. They don't care. A 2,000-pound bomb doesn't care who it kills, as long as it kills everything within its radius. And it's indiscriminately dropped on collections, known collections of people, so that the effectiveness of a non-specific bomb is remarkably enhanced. And 10 minutes after every bombing, which always increased at Ramadan, at the end of Ramadan, at the meals called iftar, as soon as people would gather to celebrate and pray, that's when the bombing specifically became more concentrated, palpably, audibly, became more populated. And that's when the sirens started, and that's the ambulance sirens. And without fail, we would start working our way to the emergency room because we knew that the ambulances, 10 ambulances, would be flooding the emergency room any moment. And when they came 15 and 20 children at a time, almost exclusively children. 90% of the people who would come into the emergency room were toddlers. There were some teenagers, almost never an adult male, some elderly males and women, and some mothers, but almost exclusively children. And when I say that, I mean 90% of the patients that we saw in the emergency room were children. Not surprising, since 50% of Gaza is high school age or younger. It's the youngest population in the world. And so, because it's the youngest population in the world, and because I knew that my tax dollars were given to an illicit country to buy bombs and donate bombs and drop those bombs on a population without giving a hoot of who was on the receiving end of that bomb, I knew that 50% of the casualties were going to be younger than my children, and younger than the children that I treated my practice. And so I felt out of embarrassment as an American that my tax dollars were going to this cause. I felt like I had to offset the internal humiliation I had for the racism and the fascism that my country was executing on behalf of a equally racist and fascist government. And I've felt that our country was doing the bidding of Netanyahu for decades. I don't think we would have entered the war in Iraq if it wasn't for him, or in Syria, or in even Afghanistan. I think he stimulated all of that in the name of protecting Judaism. And I think our senators are bought and paid for by AIPAC and other political action committees. Although AIPAC is not a registered political action committee, and unfortunately it isn't, and so it doesn't have the regulations cast upon it. But huge sums of money go to our congressmen. I think the number is 80% plus get money from Israeli lobbyists to advance their agenda, and it's a murderous agenda, and it's done. It's a Zionistic agenda, and that leads into the problem because that's not a Jewish agenda. And I think it's important that people understand that you can love Jews and hate Israel at the same time and be perfectly consistent. I hated my last president. I hated the president before him and my soon-to-be president even more. But I will never stop loving my country. Indeed, I tried to enlist in the military on my 60th birthday during the Trump presidency, and he would have been my functional boss. That's how much I loved my country. I was rejected because of my age, and that's a different story. But that's the third time I tried to enlist in the military in my life, to serve my country in an official matter and capacity. And so I love my country, but I absolutely can't stand its government. And I feel even more strongly about the Israeli government. There's, most of my living family are Jews, and I love them. I'd give them both my lungs, any one of them, both of my lungs, and my heart. It's just that those Jews and non-Jews, particularly evangelical Christians that believe in Zionism, Christian Zionists are just as horrible. They're conflating an ideology, a political ideology called Zionism, which has nothing to do with Judaism. They're equilibrating that to Judaism, and the propaganda is so dense and so perfectly intelligently executed by the Zionists and the right-wing people in the Israeli government and the right-wing Jews in the American Political Action Committee movement. The message that if you are at any point anti-Zionistic, you are to a greater degree anti-Semitic, has been ingrained in our politicians that they think, like somebody that I agree with the term Genocide Joe, that Joe Biden declares himself to be a Zionist. Now, is he really saying that I want to defend the rights of Israel, that Israel has a right to exist? Fine. I think Israel has the right to exist, but that doesn't mean Israel has the right to take the land and property that once belonged to Palestinians for millennia and make it their own. And there's no mistake that that's what they're doing.
Let me ask you, you were suggesting a moment ago that the death of the children, which is massive, and the catastrophic injuries that almost make you, and I've heard you say this, long for a particular child to die because there is no way of treating their pain. And I even remember you saying that the child was so debilitated, dehydrated, and the like that they could not even make tea. tears, a cry out. They could just be there in catastrophic pain without any real treatment. And so one, the humanitarian thing was to almost long for their death. But the UNICEF has declared the Gaza Strip as the world's most dangerous place to be a child. But where I'm going is not just that children are quote-unquote collateral consequences of a war, but in fact there is no war. There is a killing field, and that it is deliberately trying to take out the next generation. Am I wrong?
To be clear,
is that what you've also experienced?
No. You're on point. To be clear, Israel is using the invasion on October 7th, this horrible attack by Hamas. And let's make no mistake about it. Every single pro-Palestinian person that I know of or ever listen to does not justify the actions of Hamas. You can rationalize it in several ways, but that's a separate topic. But nobody can justify the horrible things that they had done. As being moral or having any remote moral equivalency. You killed my brother, therefore I'm going to kill all of your children, is the Israeli attitude.
Well, I must admit, I don't think that's what Hamas was ever set to do, but I think people, resistance is
justified.
No, I don't
either. But that, again, that's... That,
yeah. When people are
occupied. We can talk about that. We can absolutely talk about that. But to your point about the children... it is absolutely definitive based on review of Israel's history as a government, not as a, again, I'm not berating Jews. I'm berating the Israeli government, the ultra right wing government that has known criminals on the cabinet and as their leader. That government is not chasing Hamas. That is a BS excuse, and there's evidence for it. The BS excuse is, I'm going to go into the villages and not do a door-to-door knockdown like we did in Iraq, trying to save innocent people's lives and just hunt operatives. They will bomb whole villages, whole towns, whole homes under the pretense that somebody, pretense, not proof, just a suspicion that there's a Hamas operative inside, low-level operative, inside that house or in that block, they will blow up the whole block. So they're using the pretense that they're killing a Hamas combatant to kill innocent people. And they're claiming that they are acceptable losses to have. There's always unfortunate casualties of war. In reality, they're not going after the Hamas. They're going the innocent children and mothers that gather it at mealtime and in prayer are the intended target. It is a genocide. And that's when you kill a population in whole or in part by any means to dismantle their culture and society. If it wasn't a genocide, they would not have bombed the hospitals and burnt them or closed the one that I was working at 3 weeks after we left. I think maybe more accurately 6 weeks after I left. There's no reason to close that hospital. They could have kept it operational, put a Bradley fighting vehicle at every door and an Israeli soldier at every corner and every hallway. They could have scanned the SIM cards of every person who entered in and see if they had known Hamas contacts, because most people don't know this, but the telephone system is operated by Israel. The internet is operated by Israel. The satellites are operated by Israel. Israel controls the electromagnetic space, not just the airspace and the water space and the ground space, but also the electromagnetic space. They could have put a Garrett metal detector over everybody before they entered the hospital, before they entered hospital, the gateway around in this fenced in hospital property. They could have kept injured people and allowed them to come into the hospital for medical treatment, and actually even allowed surgeons in that hospital to stay working and even gave them the supplies that were denied to come in at the border. If there wasn't a genocide, when we left Gaza through the Rafah opening, the Rafah crossing, which was still open, we would not have seen 30 miles of trucks, bumper to bumper, eight trucks wide, trying to get aid into the country. if they weren't trying to commit genocide, they would have not have bombed the World Central Kitchen relief vans while I was there. If they were not trying to commit a genocide, they would not stop healthcare workers from working in the government. I'm sorry, inside the hospitals. If there wasn't going to be a genocide, they would allow to this day, if you're a healthcare worker that wants to work in Gaza, you cannot be of Palestinian descent for several generations. Even if your parents were born and raised in the United States and you were born and raised in the United States and you've never been there before, if your grandparent was born in Gaza and left when they were 1 year old, you would still not be, as a physician, allowed to go to Gaza to volunteer. And if you go, you can't bring even a box of Band-Aids with you, let alone other medical supplies. You can't bring food with you. You can't bring two food items that are similar, more than a kilogram of food, a half a pound of food. And I'm a vegetarian. I had to bring all my food with me. I'm not allowed to do that if I go back again. They impose every possible restriction to block humanitarian aid that there can be. And they'll lie and say they allowed 55 tons in. Just yesterday, they lied about that. But nobody sees this aid going in. And if it does go in, it can't be distributed because they've killed UN workers that are assigned to distribute the food. They bombed every road. They bombed storage facilities. They bombed water distribution centers and pumps. They bombed sewage treatment centers. So poop is flowing freely through the streets, and that's why polio and smallpox, not smallpox, but chickenpox are on the rise, and other communicable and respiratory diseases are widespread throughout the country. These are all by design, and even the military leadership of the country said from the very beginning that we're going to starve Gazans and we're going to allow disease to take over. This is a definitive genocide, by every definition of the word. And we've seen it. We saw innocent people deliberately targeted. I personally saw two children that were assassinated by snipers that were shot both in the chest and the head. And no child gets shot twice by mistake by a sniper. One of the children actually saw the soldier who shot his son the second time in the head. And they were doing nothing but walking to a water station with buckets to retrieve fresh water. 83% of American surgeons and doctors who went there, 83% who treated children, not everybody treated children. Some people were like OBGYN and some people were psychiatrists. But 83% of the American-only doctors. And they were. This was witnessed by other countries as well. But just surveying American doctors that were there, 83% of those that laid hands on a child saw children that were deliberately shot in the chest or head by a sniper bullet.
Well,
That doesn't happen by accident, and it's not coincidental if 83% of the doctors had seen it themselves.
We
On a
have.
regular basis. This isn't occasional. This is a regular basis.
Well, Dr. Perlmutter, we have 1 moment left. How shall we conclude? Aside from telling people we must, we must, we must, this is the week to do it. It's always the day to do it, but we must do it, particularly this week. We have some opportunity. Call your representative and demand arms embargo now. Stop allowing the U.S. to finance and arm the Israeli state, which is committing genocide. But your final thoughts in the minute we have left, Dr.
And
Perlmutter?
we could simply demand of our American senators and House of Representatives that they follow existing American law. President Biden, in response to a letter written by one of my friends in the New York Times, came out with a 30-day limit that they would have to let aid into the country, or that Biden would withhold weaponry deliveries to Israel. Those 30 days came and went. That was a BS red line, only to get the Democrats past the election. It never was serious. There's an American law called the Leahy Act that
Right, and we
forbids the
have like
delivery
30
of
seconds left, Dr. Mark.
it forbids delivery of weapons to any country that prevents the delivery of humanitarian aid to the population of that country that's being attacked. We are breaking our own American laws by not allowing that aid in. And we can just ask our senators and representatives to enable American law and withhold military aid to Israel just based on the fact that there's existing American laws that they should could simply say support this law right now. You have no, they have no choice. It's not their choice to support it. It's their job to support it.
Well, Dr. Mark Perlmutter, for the work that you do for educating, agitating, and helping to organize us to cut off the aid and to cut off the military aid and to cut up the diplomatic support for the Israeli genocide. Thank you. Thank you. And we'll continue to converse on this and do what you say, which is to organize.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me with you
Thank
tonight.
Thank you. For a free, free Palestine, I'm Mimi Rosenberg. This has been Building Bridges.